Okay, so from session three, Lisa, looking back, do you see a deficiency in your parenting or your daughter that allowed this to occur? And a deficiency.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. First of all, that's a torturous question that every parent asks themselves immediately when something bad happens. And so I probably devoted a couple years of my life trying to answer that question. And I found that I don't know everything in the vulnerabilities, but I do think there are some clues, of which here's what I've done in adjusting my parenting forward, you know, to say it that way. We don't fit a lot of the stereotypes you hear. My daughter was extremely close to my husband and had always had just a real good attachment there. But we saw that shift in adolescence to where even though she was close to him, she would not receive physical affection from him in the same way. It was our first daughter going through adolescence, and so we didn't recognize some of the subtle changes. So the way I look at it is, were there deficiencies? Well, there was a definite deficiency of understanding our vulnerability. And because of that, when I look back, I can see in hindsight warning signs we missed. But my skill base at that time was only my skill base at that time. And that's where we have to give grace to ourselves as parents. When we look back at mistakes or things that happen that are not good in our home, we are operating in the light, whereas before we were operating in a place of immaturity. So I think we had immaturity in our recognizing of vulnerability. The second one that I think is very true is I believe that I overestimated a 14-year-old and 15-year-old child. You can, if you have a child that's a strong believer and is doing well, and though I was, you know, I was very much aware that she was an adolescent, I over-trusted what she could handle. And that's silly. I didn't know as much about the prefrontal cortex as what we've talked about today. I didn't. I just didn't know that. Now, I give myself some grace. That's 12 years ago. Nobody was talking about that back then. And, you know, and so, you know, we just weren't. So you know something that I didn't know. Now, the impulsivity of a child or the ability to be deceived is not just about young children, as I said before. It's about parents as well. And so I didn't know that I could be tricked. So that was another thing that was a deficiency. I should have known that. Some of these things you can, like I say, it's subtle. Here's what I would say. If you see smoke, then you need to look for the fire. So there, in our book, it was one of the chapters I outlined, because this is usually the question I get. And, you know, I'm okay with that. It still has a sting to it, you know. I don't like that question, but like I say, I devoted enough of my life to asking it. It's probably good to talk about it, you know. And I think, you know, there were subtle things in her behavior. I didn't have a chance to go through it, but if you've never gone to Darkness to Light or another, that's a good website to go to and Google up signs and symptoms of sexual abuse problems, then you need to do that, because the physical signs for sexual abuse problems are pretty rare. Rarely do you get the physical signs, but there are emotional signs. In our case, she overachieved. So in the, I remember going to Doug 3 weeks before this came to the light, and I said, man, isn't this just awesome? Doesn't it seem like Kaylin has just like, I don't know, aged like 5 years in the last few months? She's doing everything to help me. I mean, we're having chats, we're talking. You see a big change in behavior. I was immature in my parenting to realize people don't grow all in one step like that. Again, I just didn't know that. So I thought it was great news. Really, it was on the warning sign list of a sudden change in behavior. And so immaturities, yes. Things that I would do over, yes. I teach my kids about sexual abuse issues. I've updated my own sex education with them to where they're more able to have a conversation. And here's my best clue about that. Here's what I tell my kids. Even though I'm up here talking about sexual issues, did you know I'm still uncomfortable talking about that? Would you guys admit that it still feels uncomfortable? See, now why is that? And you know what I finally realized? Here's what I believe. God designed it to be a private issue. And so I love my children enough that I'm willing to be vulnerable with them, but I don't want to extinguish it. I don't want to become like the sex talk lady that is just, you know, just doesn't have any meaning because it's private. You know, it's a private issue. So I go ahead and admit my vulnerabilities to my children now. Guys, I know this feels kind of awkward, but it's okay. And I put them at rest. And then I think I've been able to get further down the line in that. But it's a really good question. And you know, we'll make mistakes as parents. I don't like that, do you? I really don't. But, you know, our daughter has so graciously received our imperfections, and God so graciously poured out his grace in our weakness. And so you still have that place of trust in the Lord.
Well, the next four questions are for Daryl. Imagine that. What resources would you recommend to parents to explain to their children the saturation of indoctrination coming from the LGBT lobby? What resources would you recommend?
Yeah, I would encourage you, depending on the age of the kids, again, around age 9 or so, I would encourage even the DVD or the link that was up earlier. It's just a very, watch it for yourself first. Be sure that you feel comfortable with the appropriateness of your children watching it. And just begin to let them understand that there is a different belief system that we have as Christians than what they're going to see or hear at school or on the TV. And that's another thing to pull back. You know, what are we allowing in our homes? Because someone is teaching our kids on this matter. But resources, Living Hope Ministries, livinghope.org, or Live Hope, livehope.org is one. NARTH is a good resource as well for more of the deeper issues. And then NARTH. Yeah, those are the ones. And you know, those are the ones I would recommend.
Yeah. Oh, no, you keep that.
Okay.
I have four back there ready, but oh well. How do we disagree with homosexuality and voice our thoughts without being judgmental? I don't agree with it, but I feel that it is not my place to pass judgment.
Yeah, again, you know, if you're a Christian, and, you know, I assume everyone here today is a Christian, that the foundation of our belief system is in opposition to our current cultural understanding of homosexuality. And so we come, right, it's not judgmental to say, this is the foundation of my personal belief system. I believe that the Bible is my life book. It's what I base my life on. It's how I make decisions. It's how I come to my understanding of morality. And so, right, it may not sound tolerant, but it absolutely is to just be honest and say, this is why I believe what I believe. And I'm not condemning you or judging you or demanding that you change. This is just simply why I believe what I believe. And there's some who can respect that, and there's some who just absolutely will not receive it. But compromising what we believe in order to engage is never the answer. It cannot be, because what happens if we compromise in order to befriend? And then the Lord does an amazing work in that person's life outside of you or me, and they come back and they say, you know what, why weren't you truthful with me? Why didn't you tell me the truth? Why did you compromise the word? And it's happened. And so, you know, I think that's how we can disagree on the basis of our belief system. And we don't pressure. You can't change anyone. I can't change anyone. We're not pressuring anyone, manipulating in any way. We don't, by the way, Living Hope doesn't advertise. We've never advertised. And so someone has to look for us to find the support for that very reason. I hope that answered the question.
I think Daryl too, I mean, because Tim and I have counseled with a young boy, 17, and I think they want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. They want somebody that wants to hear, and they're not happy. They want people to think they're happy and that they've engaged in this and embraced it and it's what has made them happy. But when you counsel with them one-on-one, it's a whole different story. Mm-hmm. And they want to know that you're there to listen and show them truth. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't compromise.
Yeah, and you're in it for the long haul with folks. You know, this isn't going to be an easy answer, one-time prayer meeting kind of a thing. You're in this relationship. If God opens that door for you, you're in it for the long haul. And down the road, the shift will come. Just keep pointing them to Jesus, you know, and never change the message of his grace.
Exactly. In a school system, how would you address students that come to you about their same-sex relationship, wanting to know how to protect themselves? They are looking for support.
I wonder if that's to protect themselves sexually or emotionally.
Probably sexually, don't you think, Stephen? In a school, since that's what we're there to talk about.
Okay. So, yeah, in the school setting, I think we're going to want to point them to whatever support is within that system. And so if you're a teacher or an administrator in the school system, you have to work within what has been made available to you or whatever the boundaries are that your administration allows for you. Outside sources from there, then you kind of put yourself in a position to where it could come back on you. So stay within the boundaries that your school system or your administration offer. If your school district has a program similar to what it sounds like maybe some of y'all are involved in teaching in the schools, then point them that direction. And then personal counsel. You just kind of have to weigh the cost of getting involved.
Stephen and Amy, you might want to add to that because we've had that issue.
Yeah,
in the school.
I would say I've had that exact issue. I've had students come up to me after a sexual risk avoidance conversation, and they come up and said, "Well, what about me? Because I am a homosexual." And my answer to them, I always try to make the same is, regardless of what your sexual orientation is, and oftentimes they're still growing and maturing chemically, as well as, again, their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed yet. And so my advice to them is, hey, look, my advice will not be changing just because you have a different sexual orientation. The best and healthiest lifestyle for you is one person for your entire life. Anything other than that creates a new sexual double standard, you know, where before it was guys can't control themselves sexually, and now we're trying to say that heterosexuals, that's okay, that abstinence stuff is okay for them, but for homosexual couples, they have impulses they can't control, and we know that that's not true. And so their advice should still be the same. Amy, did you have anything, Amy?
And the last question. We have a transgender student at our church who insists others call her by her chosen male name and refer to her using male pronouns. How do we make her feel welcome and loved and not judged when we've already hit this roadblock?
Yeah, would you repeat it one more
yes.
time?
Yes. They have a transgender student at their church who's female but insists on others calling her by her chosen male name and refer to her as in the male pronouns. How do we make her feel welcome and loved and not judge when we've already hit this roadblock?
Wow, that is so hard. And just let me just kind of be clear too. Transgender and same-sex attraction or homosexuality are two separate issues. So the transgender is not necessarily dealing with homosexual issues at all. And we've kind of found that there's really nowhere currently that I'm aware of for Christians or those who are seeking Christ who are dealing with transgender issues to go for support. Living Hope is close, but the transgenders who come to our ministry are kind of like, while I'm sitting in a group with guys that are sexually attracted or attracted to other guys, that's not me. I'm just dealing with the fact that I feel like I'm a woman and not a man, or I'm a woman in a man's body, or a woman who feels like she's a man in a woman's body. And we need to understand those are not the same. Now that was kind of new for me, but I would encourage, yeah, go ahead too.
I met a woman who came to our community, and I could give you her website. Her name is Linda. I believe it's S-E-L-L-E-R. She works at Purdue University in the Chi Alpha program. It's an Assembly of God ministry. She comes from a transgender background, and she has just recently become a speaker and is just powerfully equipped to handle that question. The challenge she's had is she's had some pretty significant threats against her. And so if you go to her website, some of her sites are guarded. She was putting some materials out there, and then she was finding that, you know, literally her life was being threatened. And so she is, you now have to contact her, and then she will, after you talk to her a little bit, she'll release some of that. But she is incredibly good and can send you to some places on gender formation. And her testimony, it came out about 2 years ago before this big push. And so now she's she would be great to have as a resource for your team. Linda Seller, I believe it's S-E-L-L-E-R. If you Google up Linda at Purdue Chi Alpha, her name comes right out, C-H-I-A-L-P-H-A. And she speaks to college on college campuses.
That's wonderful. And as far as receiving them, I think, you know, understanding the brokenness that's there, that's where they're beginning, but that's not necessarily where they're going to end. And can we receive someone, even with their pressure, the pressure that they may put on us with to identify them in a certain way, can we receive them where they are and begin the journey with them? Again, we're wanting, all of this is about walking with people toward Christ, right? Walking with people toward wholeness in Christ. And that's not possible if we shut someone out because of their insistence on our acceptance of their brokenness. And so we have to weigh it out. I mean, honestly, you've got to weigh it out and say, what am I willing, or what are we as a church, or what are we as a youth ministry willing to do to ensure that individual's place here, and at the same time not compromise truth or the safety or the care of the other children that are involved. I think if we're speaking openly and honestly, then there's room for real growth. But if we're just kind of dancing around the issue, then we're going to miss a real opportunity with the individual and with the other kids. It's a great opportunity for our other students and our churches to hear and to see their leaders addressing this from a redemptive biblical perspective, rather than just saying, well, we can't handle this, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's so hard. And this is, you know, it's a personal issue between the Lord and each parent. There's some things that we suggest at Living Hope in our parent support group, and that is, you know, that where your child is right now in any issue, but let's take this one, where your child is right now isn't necessarily where they're going to be forever. And so the decisions we make, how we react, how we respond is so important that we do so with something else in mind than just reacting to the current situation. So I'm going to my niece, even though she grew up knowing my story, my niece entered into a lesbian relationship with someone she's been with for a long time now. They're getting ready to adopt children. And so I have to kind of deal with that same thing. How do we, she knows my story. She knows what I believe. She knows that I love her. She knows that when we get together with, she's family. The woman who she's with, we love, we receive her, but we don't compromise who we are, nor do we compromise the truth. And when question comes, I'm very honest and open with both of them. They know that I'm praying for them, and they know this statement, right? You may just be on chapter 3 of a 12-chapter book. Don't write the end at chapter 3. And I believe that, you know, and our family is believing for our niece to come back. Now, recently, she became hostile with me because of something that I had on my Facebook page that offended her. But, you know, I didn't take it down because I believe it. And it's in no way meant to hurt her, and she knows that. So the support group for parents, we need the door to be open with our kids, with our family members. We need to be able to bridge their and if you talk to the parents in the support group, there's a shift that happens when you enter into this journey where your children are now living in a lifestyle that you are not condoning. The Lord wants to do something in you. He wants to transform you. And so this is no longer about the child. It's about what is God refining in you. And I would encourage her that, you know, search out. Let the Spirit of God search out what He wants to do in you. He's preparing you for something. He's changing you. He's transforming you. He's forming you. And trust Him for what He's doing in your daughter's life.